Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
High atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
New York's governor proposes a bill to legalize same-sex marriage. An officer named Bird rescues a baby hawk that falls from the KGW raptor cam nest. And the Dalai Lama accidentally calls the Australian Prime Minister a man.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, hey, heed! For this is your new god. This is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, June 15th, 2011. An alert Portland policeman spotted a raptor chick with an injured left leg outside a downtown Portland hair salon Tuesday morning.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Hold on a second. Forgive me, I should have done this totally differently. Can you hold on a second?
Oh,
wait,
sure.
Hold on, let me just... As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, I give you Legion of News.
Officer McCager Cage Bird, yes, they call him Cage Bird, was able to grab some towels and a box from a nearby hotel and take the young bird of prey to the Dove Lewis Animal Hospital. The bird was then taken to the Audubon Society. The young red-tailed hawk likely fell from the nearby KGW Audubon Raptor Cam, according to Audubon officials. KGW Raptor Cam fans have been following the exploits of three chicks that hatched this spring. Just recently, they had been disappearing from the nest for short stretches as they learned to fly. One of them apparently not so good at it and fell and hurt its leg.
He took it to the Audubon Society, where it was then killed, stuffed, and wrapped around a stick by using twine.
On his raptor blog, Bob Salinger of the Audubon Society wrote recently about the dangers facing the young hawks learning to fly. He also wrote of a wounded one. He said, "I did go up and watch the injured nestling through the blinds on Friday. One parent was there the entire time. Even the slightest movement behind their blinds drew their attention, and I often found myself eyeball to eyeball with Dad. The injured youngster was able to stand and use the leg. I did not see any swelling or injury. We will monitor the fledgling process and see how things progress over the next week or so."
By the way, the Raptor Cam is not to be confused with the Raptus Cam, which lets you look into Dave Schmidtke's house. Just FYI for media fans. Also this, the Raptor Cam reminds me of the Mantis Cam, which is not an exciting new program starring the guy who was Mantis. It is, in fact, a thing that I keep talking about doing and that I have been thwarted out of. I think now 3 years in a row I haven't been able to do the Mantis Cam at my house. The Mantis Cam, you know, did I talk to you about the Mantis Cam before?
I don't think so. That doesn't sound familiar.
It's almost a thing that I should wait and talk about next hour, but I will just say that when you get praying manti come out of these large sort of seed pods that look like walnuts, In fact, they are almost exactly the size and shape and appearance and texture and the color of a walnut. And the deal is that they just sit outside in the sun, and then at some point they reach like a terminal, heater. You know, you put the toothpick in and it comes out clean, then you know they're done.
Ah.
And then suddenly, bam, like 300 praying mantis, you know, children come out and sort of, you know, and then begin covering the earth with their...
That sounds horrible.
No, it's sort of awesome. And so the thing is, I kept meaning to get one and then just to put it out like in the flower box outside my living room window and put a camera on it just so people could be there at the moment of hatching. And this is now the second year in a row because I guess 3 years ago was that hot apocalypse in which we didn't want to like leave the house long enough to sort of set anything up. But this is the second year in a row which the temperature is actually so cool and cloudy and overcast all the time, which is fine really for me, less fine for praying mantis offspring. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to be able to do the mantis cam again this year. So the weather gods are punishing the people.
Couldn't you set up some kind of a...
A hairdryer? I already thought about that.
Yeah, or a...
Microwave? Yep.
Yeah. A...
Strudel toaster? Yes.
A terrarium?
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Indoors or something?
No, I hadn't.
And keep it nice and warm, and then you could control your lighting and the entire environment much better.
It sounds like I could use the grow room at your house for that sort of a thing. I'm sorry, former grow room.
Oh, the grow stuff is gone. The landlord came and took that away. Yeah.
You are listening to Legion of News. It is Wednesday, June 15th, 2011. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, Science on the March, also entertainment news. And if you want to get this program later on the day via iTunes, you can do that. Also as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or legionofnews.com. You can also take it with you on your mobile or handheld device if you like. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo proposed a bill Tuesday that would legalize same-sex marriage, effectively delivering on a promise he has made since taking office in January. The Marriage Equality Act would grant same-sex couples equal rights to marry, as well as hundreds of rights, benefits, and protections that are currently limited to married couples of the opposite sex, according to a news release from Cuomo's office. Sex and the City actress and gay activist Cynthia Nixon told reporters at a press conference that she's seen a sea change in the last 2 years.
Wait a minute. Is Cynthia Nixon a gay?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I thought you knew that.
Awesome.
She has this awesome, gorgeous, big butch wife, and they have kids together.
I thought she was the one that had the sex tape come out of her, giving some guy
I don't think so. She was married previously to a man. But,
one of the Sex and the City chicks. It was given some guy like a Lewinsky, and it came out There was a sex. I'm almost positive it was a Sex and the City actress, but you know maybe not. It could be wrong. Also, honestly, with who can tell with chicks? You know, if they're gay or if they're just at a frat party trying to get somebody's attention.
Yeah.
And also, I don't like to think that gay activism is reserved, just for those of the gay persuasion
right.
Among us. That could be, that is a thing. Equality is a thing for which we should all strive every day of our lives, Don.
All right-thinking people are in favor of equality.
That's what I'm saying. All right, so here's Cynthia Nixon.
I think that people have for a long time voted with the status quo, and I think today people are starting to vote their conscience.
Okay, I think that's like an ass-dialing speech that she gave. I don't think that she's entirely aware that she's being recorded there. That's like...
I think that people have for a long time voted with the status quo, and I think...
Recorded in stalker sound. Okay,
yeah,
there you go.
That was not a good soundbite at all.
So he's signing that into law today?
No, he is proposing the bill today.
I'm so confused because I thought...
Basically, he's saying... Still sure would like to do this, guys.
I thought gay marriage was already legal in New York.
No.
I guess I'm thinking of Massachusetts. All right.
Connecticut or whatever.
Well, because there's two places. There are two states where it's just flat out legal. It's Massachusetts and I think Vermont is the other one. Because I was actually looking at a map the other day and it was states where gay marriage is completely legal. And this is in the United States. And then it was contrasted with states where it's legal to marry your first cousin. And of course, it's legal to marry your first cousin in like half the states in the union or something. But there were only two states where gay marriage was absolutely legal without restrictions. And one was Massachusetts. And I guess the other one must have been Vermont. I think New York was the thing where they had proposed it, but then the court had maybe thwarted it at the last minute. Like some busybody had stepped in and made a mess of the whole thing, as they do.
Well, it could be that the Dalai Lama was holding a grudge against Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard.
I don't think you're allowed to hold a grudge for the Dalai Lama.
For rejecting his request for a meeting. But much more likely, the global spiritual leader may just be getting old. Speaking to reporters in Australia, the Dalai Lama said he wasn't too disappointed about the rejection, but in his response, he repeatedly slipped up and referred to Gillard, Australia's first female prime minister, as a man. He said, "If your prime minister has some kind of spiritual interest, then of course my meeting would be useful. Otherwise, I have nothing to ask him. Also, you see, there's no point to seek advice from him." He continued until one of his aides quietly corrected him. Her. The Dalai Lama, unsurprisingly...
Did you say Dalai Lama?
Dalai Lama. Dalai Lama, unsurprisingly, just laughed. Because, yeah, he's a cheerful fellow.
I'm senile.
The Wall Street Journal reports that the seemingly inadvertent move kicked off several articles in the local press and renewed some political maneuvering that began early in the Dalai Lama's visit. The misstep was merely a minor political gaffe, but the larger issue of Gillard's rejection to meet with him was no laughing matter for the Australian Tibet Council. The council's Paul Burke said, "Strangely, the prime minister can find time to fly to Sydney to meet Oprah Winfrey and meets regularly with Chinese officials and heads of industry, yet cannot find 10 minutes to meet the Dalai Lama."
And this is the prime minister of who? Of where?
Australia.
No. Well, what do they really do that matters? Honestly, do they export anything? Except for AC/DC?
Beer.
I guess. Beer, but, I mean, we got that handled over here. I mean, they pretty much just... they export those listeners, Jules and Kiki? Yeah.
You know, women
that it?
Do something and men thunder down there.
I'm sorry?
In the land down under.
Yes.
How'd that song go?
Oh,
no. Or women...
I thought you were doing a stripper
reference.
Do women
reference. Roar? Is that it?
I thought you were talking about those guys that take their pants off.
No. I was thinking about the song.
That's the thunder from down under, I guess.
Yes.
All right. Who are the... It was Jules and Kiki, our listeners in Australia, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, that's it. So that is the extent to which Australia matters to me. Oh, also Luke, who listens to us in Sydney. Hello, Luke. So there you go. Beyond that, it seems like... I'm just saying, it seems like that's a thing that you could... That's the whole continent you could safely ignore.
They have kangaroos there, and kangaroos are both adorable and could kill you with their feet.
And they're sometimes comically confused with mice.
Yes.
That's a little known fact.
And they carry things in their pouches.
It's true.
And box. Which is awesome. We don't have anything like that here.
They carry things in their pouches and box. Oh, and they box
and
also
they box.
As a verb.
Right.
Okay.
Although they could carry something in a box, probably, but they have tiny little hands.
Okay.
It would have to be a very small
We're still talking about
box.
Kangaroos, aren't we?
I think so.
Carry things in their box and tiny little hands.
Yeah.
Okay. It's Art Bell's wife.
Former porn star Ginger Lee says Congressman Anthony Weiner told her to lie about their internet communications. Attorney Gloria Allred...
Awesome.
Inserting herself.
Man.
We should have had some kind of a pool to figure out how long it would take before Gloria Allred would show up.
Wait, hold on a second. Hold on. It's absolutely required now that I get this music. Hold on a second. So this is I got to get some Gloria Allred music bed. Hold on a second.
All right.
I'm not entirely certain that we'll be able to hear her under this music, but just to set the stage, the
Attorney Gloria Allred reads from one of the emails Weiner allegedly sent to Lee.
All right, my package and I are not going to beg. We both see the hazard of going down the path of comparative sexiness. At least with you, the intrusion ends after a few gawks. I get dragged into long commentary sessions at the corner bodega.
Is she speaking in code?
Lee told reporters in New York Wednesday that Weiner coached her to lie to the press.
Wait, hold on a second. I got to try this one more time.
Okay.
This is a thing that really needs to be done.
If you bring down the ticker tape thing, then maybe we can.
Yeah, but I'm busy. I'm trying to find that Beast of the Borderlands song that we can. Okay. Here we go. So I'm gonna try the Allred cut once more. And then I'm just going to give it the proper underscoring that it really requires.
Okay.
Can you just set up the Gloria Allred cut? This is for future reference, just to know if this is going to work.
Attorney Gloria Allred reads from one of the emails Weiner allegedly sent to Lee.
All right. Wait. No, I'm just failing everyone here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Gloria Allred.
All right, my package and I are not going to beg. We both see the hazard of going down the path of comparative sexiness. At least with you, the intrusion ends after a few gawks. I get dragged into long commentary sessions at the corner bodega.
What does he mean he gets dragged into long commentary sessions at the corner bodega?
I guess he's saying that when he goes out in the world, people want to talk to him about his... emails.
I see.
His wiener.
And so it's a thing that he... But it sounds like that was actually a pre-scandal conversation they were having.
Yeah, I'm really not sure.
So it seems like he was saying to her, even when I just try to go down to buy a pound of mangoes, I end up talking for a long time. God knows if we start talking about my penis, I'm going to be here all week. I'll never get anything done. We should probably not have any penis talk right now.
Yes.
Is that the last cut from Gloria Allred?
Yes.
Okay, but so we know that this theoretically works for her. I'll get that adjusted so we can use that later on.
So this should be Ginger Lee saying that Wiener coached her to lie.
He asked me to lie about our communication. I put out a three-sentence communication that he told me to say. My statement to the press said, quote, I haven't met Representative Wiener. I follow him on Twitter because I support him and what he stands for.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Ainsley Hayes from the West Wing.
Lee told reporters in New York on Wednesday that Wiener also called her one time about a sexting scandal.
On June 2nd, he called me and he told me what to say and do and how to deal with the mounting pressure from the press.
Mounting pressure.
Yeah. I think she knows how to deal with mounting pressure.
Does she ever, Don?
Yeah.
So she's, is she a porn star?
Yes.
It's so hard to keep track of porn stars named Ginger or Lee. They're just everywhere. It seems like they're all named Ginger or Lee or Nina Hartley. And that's it. And then so I could, what is, oh, I have to see what she looks like. Do you know anything about Ms. Lee?
No. Right. No, I don't keep up. I have a picture of her in my mind, and I figure I'm probably, you know, close to right.
Is it
they do have a tendency to fall within a general range of attractiveness and hairstyle.
Is it that she's an underfed skank?
Yes, with fake boobs.
Hold on.
And overly teased blonde hair.
Oh, she's gorgeous. Oh, that's Ginger Rogers. I'm sorry. Oh no, this is in fact the underfed skank we were looking at the other day, who looks like she's 12.
Oh, is it?
It was that. It's that that tiny blonde girl that we were saying, theoretically speaking.
Oh, her. Yeah.
This is we were just theorizing. I don't know that this is true. We were just theorizing that this is the sort of thing because he was perhaps had a predilection for youngish girls, and this was the only way he could legally satisfy that was with her.
I tell you though, if you do a Google search for Ginger Lee and then go to images, the second one is an awesome drag queen.
I've already closed it because she was just getting put out like a house fire. So I didn't want to say that.
Yeah, the second Ginger Lee is just an awesome drag queen. So I wish it was that one that we were dealing with actually personally. But no, she looks exactly like you think she would look.
Yeah, no, yeah. It didn't do anything for me. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program next hour when we'll have a penis taser.
A penis taser.
A penis watch and a taser watch. That is coming up next hour. Also, Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. Also, by the way, can I just tell you, I spent a long time this morning. I don't use this phrase lightly. This is not a phrase that Rick Emerson just throws around. It's not a thing I just wheel out in a barrow of some kind. I spent a long time this morning. I mean, really more time, strictly speaking, than I should have, listening to one of the worst morning shows I've ever heard in my life. I mean, it was like staggeringly bad.
Did they have wacky names?
They did. I mean, when I say morning show, I mean this is like a terrestrial, like an over the air. It was like mind-bogglingly bad, and I recorded all of it. So
was it from here in the Portland area?
I don't want to say anything else. Because if I start talking about it, then it's like, as Bill Carter would say, you can't let the air out of that tire. You got to just wait.
You want to keep that in its bag for now, is what you're saying?
Sure. So I have 90 minutes. Of as they say, unscoped audio from
this.
So
we don't really even have to do a show this afternoon at all. You could just play that.
I just let them do their show a second time, and it's going to be glorious. Perhaps not in the way that they intended. But I have a lot of that we'll talk about later on. So that's next hour at rickemersonshow.com.
Portland Police tactical officers took a man into custody they believe was responsible for a violent burglary in Northeast Portland early Tuesday morning. Sergeant Pete Simpson of the police bureau said, "We're very happy it ended this way." The man was identified as Michael Gerard Parker, 26. He's accused of first-degree burglary and robbery and two counts of secondary assault. Detectives believe the man is a suspect in a 3 a.m. burglary at Northeast 43rd and Siskiyou in Portland's Beaumont-Wilshire neighborhood. Police said the homeowner was awakened by the man, grabbed a knife, and fought the suspect until he was able to stab him.
Okay.
We have a fruit basket contestant here, I believe.
That was the guy dead?
No. Okay. No, but he did. He woke up at 3 a.m., burglar in his house.
But I mean the burglar.
No, the burglar's
okay,
not dead.
Okay, so
yeah,
it's...
Yeah, the homeowner, he grabbed a knife, and he said, "I will battle you," and he ended up stabbing the guy.
But he stabbed him until the guy, either did the guy flee, or did the cop show up, or did the guy pass out?
I believe the guy, he was, let's see, I guess they got there and he was still there and he was detained and then they took him to the hospital.
Okay.
And then he was treated for his injury.
Getting more of that free socialized health care done.
Yeah. A friend of his, whose name is Dwight Miniweather.
Awesome.
Was apparently at the location of the house. And he said, I believe of the suspect, he's a good guy. I don't imagine what went wrong here. Something obviously has taken a turn for the worse, desperate in some form over another.
What with his burgling homes and all.
Yeah, and being stabbed.
Yeah, okay.
But I tell you, just anybody that, you wake up at 3 in the morning and there's a guy burglaring your house, and you get into a knife fight with him.
Well, I don't even know that I would have a knife handy is the thing. That's what's impressive is, like, I'm not even really sure. I don't even really know what, you know, like, occasionally you do that thing of, like, my wife or somebody would, did you hear something? And you say, well, I don't know, I guess because I have a penis, I'll go check it out. And so you get out of bed, but it's like you realize, like, how retarded that is, because what am I going to do? Seriously, I mean, of the two of us, my wife is really, of every living thing in the house, I'm last on the list of the things that should be sent to defend anybody from anything, because I'm spindly.
No, Philo. Philo is last. It goes Laura, Max, you,
I guess.
Philo.
No, that's probably fair. Because Philo and I would just be sitting there just going, I don't know, where's Max? Or, you know, and then you realize, like, and then I think, well, maybe I should arm myself. Like, and then you think, well, with what? I mean, there's nothing, I don't own a gun. I am not, I mean, I have, you know, I guess, I think I know where the paring knives are kept, but that's not really going to intimidate anybody. I mean, all I can really use is my rakishly arched eyebrow, you know, and that doesn't really have the same effect.
Yeah, generally at 3 in the morning with a burglar, if you're just, you know, wryly sarcastic,
yeah,
it doesn't generally do a lot.
You know, it's not like I can just try to fill the burglar with self-esteem issues so that he actually just takes it upon himself to leave voluntarily.
You'd mock his shoes.
That's right.
Until he just leaves out of sadness. Shares of the internet radio company Pandora started trading at $20 a share in the company's IPO offering, about $4 higher than the company's target price. The company is now worth billions, despite having never turned a profit. CEO Joe Kennedy says the business model for Pandora is much like that of traditional radio.
Let's just lose money as long as we possibly can and see if people keep giving us cash.
We've demonstrated in the financials that are published that we can continue to grow revenue over time. We're also investing significantly to deliver a better and better experience to our listeners, to enable them to listen to it in the car, in the home.
Kennedy says the company will perform well in the long term.
The business model of Pandora is a lot like radio historically, in that most of our listeners listen for free, supported by advertising. We do have a subscription product. So at a high level, it's a pretty simple business model, and it builds on the tradition of the radio experience.
So what is the deal with, because I haven't listened to Pandora in a long time, and I have, and I, you know, and by the way, and I say this as somebody that this is years ago, this is actually in 2006, I guess. In 2006, I actually, we don't really know each other all that well, but I kind of know Tim Westergren, the guy who founded Pandora, and when he came to town to do a sort of, he did like a little symposium, something or other. He did some sort of a public speaking event, and he and I had lunch and we talked and whatever. And they said, I don't really know him that well, but I remember writing this blog about Pandora, writing this article for my website, and just talking about how Pandora was the most revolutionary thing that I'd seen in a long time, and just saying, you know, that. And my thing then was, this is in 2006, was if they just start manufacturing cars that either have some sort of Pandora-equipped radio, you know, in them, or cars that just have, you know, that just have internet access, cars that just have, you know, Wi-Fi, or that are just tethered to some sort of external, whether it's, you know, however that internet access is being delivered, that was going to be like the final nail in the terrestrial radio coffin. And I think that'll still happen. I just don't know that it's necessarily going to be Pandora, because it seems like there's a lot of services like Pandora. You know, that in other words, that their share of the market is sort of splintered among a lot of other services, especially if, you know, like if Apple or somebody gets into the subscription music business, which, you know, isn't like out of the question at this point. So I wonder, the upshot of this is I don't really have a user end experience Pandora for the last couple of years. What is the subscription model of Pandora? Is it without ads?
Yeah,
is it
that's
deal?
Basically it, without ads. And then you have, I think, an unlimited number of songs that you can skip. Because I use it on my iPhone, and there's a little pop-up thing that comes up that shows you, like, hey, you should use Living Social, and you go away. And then, like, about every, I don't know, six songs or so, a very short little ad will come up and say, you should buy this thing. And it goes away. And it's pretty inobtrusive. And then you have, I think per day, you have something for free. You have something like 5 skips that if you don't like the song, you can just say, no, skip ahead. And but you only get like 5 a day. And that's unlimited if you're subscribing. So it's that and then no ads, I guess.
I think the biggest, for me, the biggest issue with Pandora is, and again, and I wish those guys all the success in the world, because here's the other reason why people, why I'm glad that Pandora's out there kind of doing what they do, because Pandora, to a large degree, is sort of leading, maybe not leading the fight, but they are a huge player in the sort of fight to stabilize and level the playing field in terms of music royalties and music licensing, as it is incumbent upon online broadcasters as compared to terrestrial broadcasters, because we've talked about this, that online broadcasters have to pay effectively twice the royalty rate. And Pandora has really been one of the companies, at least to my knowledge, that's out there sort of fighting that and trying to get it all equalized. The biggest issue with Pandora to me, the biggest liability with them from a customer point of view, is that they still don't give you the one thing which you inherently want if you are a streaming radio listener, which is the ability to go, you know what, a song I'd really like to hear right now, and then hear it, which you can't do. And so that's the real Achilles heel that they have there, especially if part of their thing is a subscription model, yet a subscription model that does not actually allow you to hear a song when you want to hear it. I mean, that it just seems like the internet customer of 2011 and beyond is not going to tolerate being told they can't listen to something that they want to listen to.
I would also, and maybe this is just me, that I don't know how to use Pandora correctly, because I've only been using it since I got my iPhone, but I'd like to be able to blend my
channels. Like half Sinatra, half Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
That's an interesting idea.
So it's like if I could choose like 2 or 3 of them and say, yes, I want like, you know, the Social Distortion channel, you know, and the Sinatra channel and the, you know, whatever, the ELO channel or something, and then listen to all of those.
The Sinatra and ELO channel. I'm just trying to imagine what that would even sound like. All right.
Because the thing is, if I listen to I think I feel like a little ELO, and then I listen to the ELO channel, and all I'm getting for like a half an hour is ELO and Queen and Supertramp, which I like all of them, but, you know, after about 15 minutes, it's like, okay, I'm ready for something else now.
Right.
So
I really do like the whole premise of Pandora, which they have that whole music genome project where they, and the idea that it does let you discover things that you probably wouldn't have heard otherwise. It just seems like they got to at least, At the bare minimum, they're going to have to build in some third tier that allows you greater control over what you're listening to. So, in other words, it's sort of... Because right now, you know what the thing is with Pandora? Pandora is sort of like Autopia, where, you know, you can kind of give it a little bit of direction, but ultimately they're choosing whatever song is next. I mean, they're, you know, whatever comes up next on the playlist is up to them. They need to have a thing where you can do a manual override, insert a particular song that you happen to be hankering for at that moment, and then as soon as that song is done, then it resumes going back to the Pandora-generated playlist.
I can see that.
I mean, I think that instant gratification is going to be the thing that people have to have in 2011 if they're going to keep their customer base online.
Did we listen to the second cut here?
I don't think so.
Kennedy says the company will perform well in the long term.
This is cut 2?
The business model of Pandora.
Oh, I'm sorry, this is right.
This is part of a long-term story that we're developing for Pandora, and we'll look back, you know, years from now, and this will just be one step along the way.
I will laugh at how stupid we were.
Continue to give us money, please.
Kennedy says the IPO is just the first step.
I guess maybe that's, I'm playing these out of order.
We've demonstrated in the financials that are published that we can continue to grow revenue over time. We're also investing significantly to deliver a better and better experience to our listeners, to enable them to listen to it in the car, in the home.
Okay, there you go.
All right.
Seamus snarkily notes, free content and paid subscription content, that'll never work. They're crazy. Snicker, snicker, snicker.
Uh-huh.
All right. By the way, we wish to send happy birthday tidings to our good friend Seamus, who turns...
Happy birthday.
I don't know. It doesn't matter, because it's younger than me, so therefore...
Yeah. You
know.
He's timeless, really.
Yeah. No, he actually... Seamus noted that yesterday that when we were talking about whether or not... whether or not we could physically assault mayoral candidate Max Brum, and I was noting that you know, blah blah blah, 38, blah blah blah, 19. And Seamus noted that you know, he was talking about my advancing age, and that he was 23, I believe, when he started listening, and so he is, I don't know, however old now. I don't know. When I got into this whole sentence just like 30 seconds ago, it occurred to me that there might not be a way at the end of
you
this.
Had
and
no
I have to calculate
exit strategy there?
I have no withdrawal method for this sentence, but I thought at the end that there was going to be some way that I could calculate his age, and now I realize that that was a fool's errand, and I've just wasted everybody's time. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Still to come this hour, your entertainment news, and in mere moments, you have Science on the March. Don't forget, next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program at rickemersonshow.com. Today, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, and we will talk to Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. Here is Don Taylor.
And it is indeed time for science.
Look at that over there. It's some science. Science in the March brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric. You can also call 503-252-1609 if you like, and you can have them come out to your business, to your home, or to your home-based business, and they can give you a free estimate up top so you know about what it's going to cost you. If you have an inspection coming up, if you need something installed or repaired, or perhaps upgraded or improved, or if you just like to conflate all those words down, if you need something, I guess if you needed something impaired, they probably could do that too. Although, let's be honest, you could probably impair something. You probably have impaired the thing at home, which is why you need to call them in the first place.
If you need something impaired.
Exactly.
Yes.
You know, or if you're just stepping over the smoking husk of your spouse, you know, on the way to the phone because he just, you know, he clipped the red wire and not the green wire or something. You've got Squires Electric. They're licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. It basically means if it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or your business, if you're building it for the first time, if you're gutting out a building and expanding it, if you're going to be putting two buildings together, if you're going to be renting something out or renting from somebody and you want to make sure it all operates properly, Squires Electric can make sure that that works out well for you and that it works out well the first time, so you don't have to get some guy to come fix the shoddy work done by some jackass in the past. SquiresElectric.com or Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. Here is Don Taylor.
I just decided to not read a story about the sun fizzling out a little bit and being lazy in the next lunar cycle, because as I was glancing over it, I realized I understood absolutely none of it, and it was going to get both of us into trouble. So,
is it about sunspots?
Not really, no.
Okay. Because I could have contributed to that conversation.
No, I don't even. It was about the sun is going to be lazy in the next solar cycle.
Yeah, I don't really know what that means.
No, I don't either.
Maybe I don't have the proper degree of, you know, anthropomorphizing going on.
And I read about six paragraphs, and it just didn't explain it. So I figured it was a morass we were best not getting into. Instead, though, we'll tell you about how hopping on a bicycle saddle and pedaling through the heart of the city is not for the faint of heart. Besides being safeguarded by minimal protection against aggressive traffic, their slower pace and low visibility often subjects bikers to unfathomable road rage and projectiles hurled from angry motorists.
And that's just when you're near Sam Adams.
Whoa.
Hey, now.
Helping bridge this gap is Blaze, B-L-A-Z-E, a device invented by Emily Brooke, a final year product design student at the University of Brighton. Her device alerts drivers to the presence of bikers by projecting a laser image onto the road in front of the bicycle. She said 80% of cycle accidents occur when bicycles travel straight ahead and a vehicle maneuvers into them. The most common contributory factor is failed to look properly on the part of the vehicle driver. The evidence shows the bike simply is not seen on city streets. To make bikers more visible, the handlebar-mounted device projects a bright green, diamond-shaped shared lane symbol on the pavement several feet in front of the cyclist. The symbol, even visible in daylight, can be made to flash on and off. The idea is that motorists will notice the green image on the road and take precaution, even if they don't see the cyclist in their blind spot.
Well, that's a good idea. I got two thoughts on this. One is that's a good idea because I'm immediately picturing that corner of 39th and Hawthorne where I'm turning, I guess, right if I'm heading up Hawthorne by the Hawthorne Theater, because I've talked about this many times. I'm almost doing this like a sort of Catherine Tremell thing of trying to lay my alibi in advance, because I know that if I ever hit a cyclist, I mean accidentally, it'll be there because they are always, it's like they're just invisible until the last moment somehow. Even if I do the head check, it's like out of nowhere, bicyclists just appear right next to the car because there's no bike lane there as such. There's no green box or nothing. It's like you just turn right and they're just there. And so if there was something to alert you to their oncoming presence, that would be great. It seems like having a laser that is pointed at oncoming traffic might end badly, though.
Well, it's not pointed at oncoming traffic. It's pointed
not
down
initially.
Well, yes, it could get bumped
that's
up.
Look, I got to tell you this. I have a bike light that theoretically is supposed to aim straight ahead that now points, like, up at Jupiter. So all you need is a laser to get you bonked and straight ahead, and that seems like that's going to have undesirable. That's going to have collateral damage.
Well, she did. She consulted with road safety experts while she was doing this, and with driving psychologists. And her invention won her a free tuition waived course at Babson College in Massachusetts, where she will continue to develop her product. She's also being considered for an Enterprise Award for innovation.
I will tell you that I was actually, what the hell was I? I was headed downtown or someplace, or maybe it was on like Madison. But I did notice that one of those green bike boxes, I guess it's on, I think if you are going down, I don't know, if you're like Madison headed toward Grand in Southeast, one of those green bike boxes, the paint is almost entirely gone already. And I think
really?
They only put that thing down like a year or so ago. Yeah, the paint is, I mean, there's on the edges it's still there, but anywhere where the car's wheels are constantly, you know, the tires are coming into contact with it, the paint is almost entirely worn through to the pavement and gone.
Because that was like $3,000 worth of, like, fancy special paint.
Yeah, well, because I think it was Anna Griffin telling us they had to get the paint from, like, Boston or something, because that was where they'd pioneered the whole bike box thing. And they wanted this paint that was impervious to all of the elements and, in fact, to the tires of cars, which is not really proven to be the case.
It's not. Otzi the Iceman, the 5,300...
I'm sorry, Nazi the Iceman?
Otzi.
Okay.
Otzi the Iceman, or Otzi, he has an umlaut over his O, which Otzi the Iceman, the 5,300-year-old mummy found in the Italian Alps 20 years ago.
He's the huddled over for warmth guy.
Yeah.
All right.
And the reconstruction of his face, he just looks like every home... He looks like the hobo who approached me for a change in the Jack in the Box drive-through lane the other day. And when I gave him a dollar, he said, "Don't get into trouble. That's my job." And then he started cackling and he walked away.
Okay.
Anyway, Otzi looks kind of like that guy. He suffered from cavities, worn teeth, and periodontal disease. Presented at the 7th World Congress on Mummy Studies in San Diego, California. And you know that's a wild weekend.
Mm-hmm.
The research dismisses the assumption that dental pathologies did not afflict the Tyrolean Iceman. Roger Seiler of the Center for Evolutionary Medicine at the University of Zurich in Switzerland said, "In the past 20 years, the mummy has been examined thoroughly, both anthropologically and medically. However, oral pathologies were not found."
How old is he?
5,300 years old.
Is it really news that a guy from 6,000 years ago wasn't really able to go to the dentist or floss regularly?
Well,
that just seems stupid.
Well, you know, they look at these guys, though, to see what, you know, what happened to them, because their diet was very different from ours. And
yeah, but I mean,
see how they aged and what kinds of diseases they had.
I guess it just seems like if you were to poll the average person on the street and go, "Guy from 5,500 years ago when there were no dentists, tooth problems?" I think probably everybody would go, "Yes."
Well, they did find that he did not lose a single tooth until his death at about the age of 40. But he did have an advanced abrasion of his teeth, profound carious lesions, and a moderate to severe periodontitis. I don't even know how you say that. In particular, the molars of his upper jaw showed loss of bone as a sign of periodontal disease, while evidence of mechanical trauma was found. They believe, and they also found, they were very surprised by the high number of cavities. They said these dental pathologies are a sign of change in the Neolithic diet. They believe that he was eating grains, and the grains contained carbohydrates, which clearly increased the risk of developing dental diseases.
Yeah.
So on the pre-grain diet, the cavemen actually had pretty good teeth. But once they started eating grains and their carbohydrate intake went up, they started seeing more periodontal disease and more problems with their teeth. So there you go. That's
is that our final story? Is that we're going outside?
That's all science-y.
Okay.
No, I got one more here,
okay.
a sort of a tech story. The settlement of its epic 20-month patent dispute with Apple that Nokia announced early Tuesday could spell trouble for the makers of Android phones. There's no question Apple lost the legal battle that pitted its significant intellectual property holdings against Nokia's even deeper patent portfolio. The terms of the settlement were not disclosed, but they require Apple to make a one-time payment and ongoing royalties large enough to materially improve Nokia's earnings for the quarter. Nokia's stock was up 3% in European trading. Apple shares also rose on the Frankfurt Exchange on Tuesday. According to Foss Patents' Florian Mueller, who had predicted the outcome, it frees up resources for both companies. He said, "Apple is in litigation with the three leading Android device makers, Motorola, HTC, and Samsung. Nokia doesn't have any litigation worries at the moment, but part of its new strategy is to ratchet up its monetization of its patent portfolio." Basically, they said that given the Android is in many ways a ripoff of Apple's operating software, Android-based devices are highly likely to infringe on largely the same Nokia patents that Apple now felt forced to pay
for. I hadn't thought about that at all. So that is a sort of, that's one of those, the old joke that, you know, that Bill Gates used to tell about stealing, because everybody claimed that Windows was a ripoff of Mac. And so Bill Gates used to talk about how, you know, that he and Steve Jobs both lived next to this neighbor named Xerox Park, and that he broke into Xerox Park's house to take the television, but then realized Steve Jobs had already stolen it. And so that's it, so this sort of thing does happen a lot, where somebody, you know, X steals from Y and then Z steals from X. It had never really occurred to me, because there was a whole thing the other day with this whole thing between Samsung and Apple. Was you reach this point of conflagration because Samsung was demanding that Apple turn over a lot of the very, very earliest versions of its hardware, so that Samsung, you know, their claim was that so they could see if it infringed on them. And Apple was like, no, you just want to look under our skirt and see how everything works. You know, we're not going to show it to you. So we really had reached this flashpoint of contention. It had never really occurred to me, though, that the end result of that in this domino effect would be that everybody who then ripped off the iPhone, which is fine, and people rip off other people for stuff in all realms of business. That's fine. It had never really occurred to me, though, that would domino effect its way all the way down to Android people.
Yeah, and then back again with iPhone. Then therefore, apparently, Apple also stealing things from others as well. I mean, everybody's stealing things from all over the place. But this dispute started in 2009. Nokia claimed that iPhone was infringing on 10 patents that they held, and that was on the integration of GSM, UMTS, and wireless LAN. And then there was just suits and countersuits, and eventually, through all of these like massive suits and countersuits, it ended up covering a total of 75 patents in 7 different legal venues.
Well, and let's not forget, by the way, that the name iPhone was in fact stolen. iPhone had already been the actual term iPhone, as it regards you know, a small cellular telephone device with, I think, multimedia capabilities, was already in use, and I think had in fact been trademarked. And it wasn't Samsung, although it might have been, I now forget. But there's this famous Steve Jobs moment where he basically just went up and, you know, he's holding a press conference or, you know, at the Macworld Expo, and he goes, oh, and one more thing, blah, 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 blah. It's called the iPhone. And then you do the jump cut to the headquarters of, like, TechCo or whatever, where they already have a thing called the iPhone that they have, you know, trademarked, kind of going, well, what? You know, and then they eventually got some huge payoff from Apple. Here's why this really screws Android phone makers way more than it does Apple. Because even if everybody has to pay the same settlement, even if Apple had to pay twice the settlement that any of the Android folks do, it doesn't really matter, because Android operates on such a slim profit margin. Yeah. As opposed to Apple. I saw a chart the other day. It was an infographic about the smartphone market, and they were noting that even though Androids are now, I think, the majority of the smartphone market, the lion's share of the market is now going to them in terms of operating system, and yet the revenue, the profit associated with smartphones, like 74% of that is Apple's, and the rest is all divided up among everybody else in the market. So it almost doesn't matter how much Apple has to pay compared to Android, because Apple has way more to burn on this, because their profit margins are so much higher.
Well, no, and it ends up still kind of working in Apple's favor, because now that Nokia has emerged victorious on these patent fights, now anybody who is building Android phones will also have to pay Nokia, you know, if they're using these devices that they've patented. So it ends up making it even more expensive to build an Android. So ultimately, even though Apple lost, it's actually like going to be dinging their competitors every time they build a new Android phone.
Yeah, and Android just doesn't, they don't have a lot of money to burn there, because they're not vertically integrated the way that Apple is. And so they're just not making, they don't have the financial cushion. It was Cisco, by the way, and it was a voice over internet protocol phone, and it was called the iPhone. And yeah, and there is some story where, like, literally they were just sitting there kind of watching the thing, and Steve Jobs goes, and it's called an iPhone. And it's like they, like, sitting in the place that has already, you know, manufactured and trademarked the iPhone. And somebody had pointed it out to Steve Jobs, like, there's already an iPhone. He's like, yeah, we'll fix it. You know, and so, you know, what are you going to do? Is that the end of...
That's the end of science.
All right, there is your Science in the March. Brought to you by Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609 or Squires Electric. .com. Still to come this hour, you got your entertainment news, and then coming up next hour, we have Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. We'll be here also. Peanuts Watch, Taser Watch, and really some truly, truly terrible radio. And I mean, in addition to the stuff that we're doing, I mean, bad radio done by other people.
And, of course, some discussion of my enormous victory last night at Geek Trivia.
Oh,
huzzah!
Were you, did you triumph over all competitors?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. My Super Justice team of Thomas Gill and Andrew Hill and David Walker and I, we just steamrolled everyone.
Now I didn't know that Thomas Gill was actually playing on your team.
He wasn't going to, but he got kicked off of his original team. They had too many people, so he came and joined my team.
Look, I don't know, and I don't want to know because I don't want this to sound like it's a personal thing. I don't know who his original team was, but I mean,
fools.
Unless the other guys in your life raft are like Stephen Hawking and Al Gore and Gary Gygax. Like, whoever voted Thomas Gill off that team is really just not thinking things through to the logical end.
And also Glenn Peters, who is a listener, and he also brought his own wealth of geekery to the mix. So yeah, we were a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, no, that's just. I mean, I could have told you on paper that was going to turn out that way.
And I did a little dance of victory, and Court told me that I was a bad winner, but
well,
I didn't
just,
care.
The thing is, you should just retire as of now. You shouldn't play again after this week.
It can never get this good.
Yeah, I wouldn't tempt fate by going back a second time to that well.
Anyway, Multnomah County's busiest bridge is going to be hopelessly borked until November. Work was underway today to replace the slick steel grating on the Morrison Bridge with a polymer compound that feels like asphalt. It's similar to the surface now found on the Broadway Bridge. The safety improvement will come at the expense of commuter times throughout the summer and the fall, where only one lane will be open in each direction.
Woo! I mean, crap.
Drivers can expect delays until at least late fall.
Excellent.
And by at least late fall, they mean God only knows when. County spokesman Mike Pullen said, "We will have a solid surface when the project's over." Several fatalities have been blamed in part from the slippery grating. In 2005, a woman survived her plunge off the bridge after her car slipped on the grating, and which they don't mention that she was also driving a top-heavy SUV, and she was speeding and changing lanes in the rain.
Yeah. But that being said, you know, I go across the Hawthorne Bridge sometimes when it's raining or when it's wet or slick, and the thing is, and I'm in a car that's low to the ground, it's not top-heavy, and I don't speed when I go across the bridge because you can't. And there are moments, I don't know if I'm actually losing control of the car, but there are many, many moments where it feels like your car is about to completely go wonky on you and go sideways. It doesn't matter. And, it's the same on my wife's car, driving across where there is just that sense that you are losing your purchase, your adhesion on the grating on that bridge. It's deeply unnerving.
A barber in Connecticut who refused to do a haircut assigned by his boss was arraigned for stabbing the barbershop owner with a pair of scissors after the owner told him to pack up his clippers and leave the shop early. Willie Samuels, 29, of New Haven, Connecticut, was charged with second-degree assault and interfering with an officer. At his arraignment, Samuels, who has a conviction for possession and sales of narcotics, was ordered held in lieu of $50,000 bond. Police were called at 6:38 p.m. Monday by someone who said there was a stabbing at Georgie's barbershop and the victim was being driven to Norwalk Hospital. At the hospital, police found a man bleeding from a superficial chest wound who was waiting to get into the emergency room. When police asked who stabbed him, the victim said it was Samuels. The victim, who owns Georgie's barbershop, said he and Samuels were arguing about customers not being served in the proper order. The two got into a verbal dispute, and after the owner told Samuels to clear out of the business, the two began to struggle. At one point, Samuels put the 25-year-old owner of the store in a headlock and pulled him to the ground. When Samuels became aggressive again after the two were pulled apart, the owner began to swing a pair of clippers on a cord at him, but missed. And then Samuels reached up to the counter, pulled out a pair of scissors, and he stabbed him with the scissors.
It seems like of all the guys you want to pick fights with, regardless of what side of the equation you're on, the barbershop and anybody working within the barbershop or just sort of hanging out there, it seems like they'd be last on the list. Because there's a whole... It's like picking a fight with a guy who just happens to be at a cutlery store, you know?
Yeah, he apparently ran off, and they found him at a local elementary school, Willie Samuels, with a torn shirt, no shoes, and blood in his hands. At first, he told the police his name was Rafael Santana.
Not Willie Samuels.
Not Willie Samuels, but okay. Fingerprints revealed his true identity.
Okay.
Yeah. The rain was probably at fault at the Albany Welding Supply business where the giant chemical fire took place. Fire Marshal Mike Trebu says the Sunday night fire at Industrial Welding Supply was apparently caused by moisture reacting with a drum of calcium carbide, which is used in making acetylene gas. The Corvallis Gazette-Times reports the company had received a shipment of about 350 drums last week and stored them outside under tarps. One drum apparently was damaged or had a poor seal that allowed the heat-generating reaction during Sunday's rain, And then, of course, firefighters turned their hoses on it, and that made it all worse. And eventually, they used dry chemicals to put out the flames. Things could be getting a little more uncomfortable for Lance Armstrong. The FBI has contacted a Colorado restaurant asking for footage of an alleged confrontation between the seven-time Tour de France winner and former teammate Tyler Hamilton. The chance encounter between the two cyclists appears to be their first since 60 Minutes aired an interview with Hamilton, in which he accused Armstrong of using banned drugs during his career. Federal officials are currently investigating doping in professional cycling with a keen focus on Armstrong. CBS reported in May that a Los Angeles grand jury has been hearing secret testimony from some of Armstrong's former teammates on the U.S. Postal Service team.
Why don't we just decide that science was no longer a thing we were going to pay attention to? I mean, at what point did we just decide that, like, I don't know, he seems kind of shady, trumped, like, he's passed every drug test they've ever given him? I have no idea why the inherent rejection of science in this country has such a firm foothold in our collective psyches. It's not like we're going to figure out the answer to that, like, here today. But it is, of course, it's not like I even really understand science the way that a lot of people do. But, you know, it does seem like we are a country filled with some pretty bright people who do know how the natural world works. It seems like that really is that's a thing that we understand to a greater degree than, like, I don't know, the fact that you just kind of don't like a guy.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly wouldn't be surprised, you know, if it turned out in some manner that Lance Armstrong, you know, had been using some kind of drug. But on the other hand, you would think, yes, that repeated drug testing by professionals would trump some guy saying something.
I mean, I would be surprised, though, because at this point, I mean, he's one of the most tested professional athletes, I think, you know, of contemporary athletes, you know, people who are still competing or who were competing within the last few years. I mean, he's got to be one of the most high profile guys in terms of drug tests, if not the most high profile. So I would really be surprised by now, if only because that would make him not only, you know, like the greatest cyclist in the history of the sport, but also like a mad scientist genius who figured out a way to beat drug tests that no one else on the planet has.
Well, the video that they're looking at, Hamilton's lawyers are going to they're basically sending this video to the FBI as some sort of proof that Armstrong, you know, might have been up to something, when in fact it's really just Armstrong being incredibly pissed at this guy,
just beating a guy's ass
for saying the things he's been saying.
Seriously,
Hamilton's attorney says Armstrong repeatedly asked Hamilton how much, and this was at this restaurant that they have the videotape. Armstrong repeatedly asked Hamilton how much he had been paid to do the television interview, and added that his legal team would expletive destroy you, tear you apart on the witness stand, and, quote, make your life a living expletive hell.
Awesome. Excellent.
None of that really sounds at all like, you know, he's admitting that he did anything. It sounds like he's pissed off at this guy for taking money to lie about it.
Exactly.
Him.
I mean, and it's not like sports. It's not like it's without precedent that a guy, the guy would jam himself full of something to perform better. But Lance Armstrong, I mean, if we're going to talk about just gut sense and just your read on someone, based on sort of amorphous and non-quantifiable, characteristics. Lance Armstrong doesn't seem like a guy who's guilty of anything, and he doesn't seem like a guy who's afraid that he will ever be found guilty of anything. I mean, he seems very, very, very hard-nosed about the whole deal, but he's also a professional athlete and a competitor and kind of a dick, apparently. So, I mean, it doesn't really surprise me that he behaves that way. I mean, every industry has its Steve Jobs, you know?
Let's do a very small amount of entertainment news before the end of the show.
All right. It's just Billy Barty news.
Yes. Actor-writer Justin Theroux, who is dating his Wanderlust co-star Jennifer Aniston, has split up with Heidi Bivens, his girlfriend of 14 years. Heidi is heartbroken, said the costume designer's rep to the New York Post. She was completely blindsided. She and Justin had been together for years. They had a home. Then he met Jennifer and everything changed. At first, he claimed he and Jen were just friends. Former The Bachelorette star Ali Fedotowsky fractured her femur while kickboxing. The reality star is using crutches to walk and will likely have surgery. No word on how her condition will affect her upcoming nuptials to Robert Martinez, the man who received the final rose from Fedotowsky on The Bachelorette. And the wedding between Hugh Hefner and Crystal Harris has been called off, according to TMZ. The 84-year-old was expected to marry the 24-year-old Harris on Saturday, The site reports that Harris had second thoughts about the nuptials after they had a heated phone argument over the weekend.
Hefner tweeted about it, too. He actually, TMZ, I don't know, you know, they may know more about the cause of it. But yeah, Hefner put it out on Twitter, I guess on Friday, maybe, or Saturday. But he said, you know, wedding off, blah, 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 changed her mind, blah, 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 sucksors, whatever.
Ed Harris and Matthew Fox are in talks to star with Brad Pitt and James Badge Dale in World War Z. Directed by Mark Forster, the movie centers on a world dominated by zombies. The picture is based on the Max Brooks novel of the same name.
I know this makes me an idiot. Mark Forster. He is who?
I can't tell you off the top of my head. I should know this because I know the name and I just can't remember what he's directed immediately.
Is it, this is, I guess, a thing that I actually could have looked up. Let's see, Mark Forster. Now it's going to bug me. Because the other thing that I want to know is if it's they're still using that script that that J. Michael Straczynski had. He did Quantum of Solace.
Oh, did he?
Monsters Ball and Finding Neverland.
Oh, dear God.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
I thought you liked Finding Neverland.
No. Okay. No, I did not.
He also did Stranger Than Fiction. Here's the thing. Here's what Mark Forster appears to have done. This is just based on my initial read here. He's done a lot of movies that I wanted to like and didn't.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Hell. Okay. Sean Astin and Jason Biggs will lend their voices as Raphael and Leonardo to a new animated Mutant Ninja Turtles series for Nickelodeon. Rob Paulsen, who starred as Raphael in the first Mutant Ninja Turtles film, will voice Donatello. Rob Paulsen was also Wacko Warner.
Wait, hold on. Let me
Animaniacs.
Let me just check my list of obligatory pop culture references that I have to. But what about Vanilla Ice? Because he did that rap song that was from that one movie with the Ninja Turtles that we all loved way back then. Mm. Remember stuff that was old?
Yeah. Deadline reports that Rob Lowe will play Drew Peterson, the man charged with the murder of his third wife, in a Lifetime movie that's tentatively titled The Drew Peterson Story, a.k.a. Lady Killer. Big Bang Theory star Kaley Cuoco will play Peterson's fourth wife, Stacy, who disappeared in May 2010. The movie's based on the nonfiction book Fatal Vows, The Tragic Wives of Drew Peterson. And FX has purchased the broadcast rights to the film Super 8, which debuted last weekend. The network also purchased the rights to The Hangover Part 2 2 weeks ago. Both pictures are slated for late 2013-2014 premiere. That's timely, FX. Just zip that out 2 years after it comes out, like on your TV station.
Have you seen Super 8?
Not yet, no.
Okay, never mind then.
Last night, 3 months after the epically fraught musical Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark scrubbed its original creative team, including director and co-creator Julie Taymor, a revamped Super Bonoed revision opened at Broadway's Foxwood Theater.
Super Bonoed.
The reviews are in, and critics are falling all over themselves to damn the show with unanimously freight praise. Ben Brantley in the New York Times review said, "Is this ascent from jaw-dropping badness to mere mediocrity a step upward? Well, until last weekend, when I caught a performance of the show's latest incarnation, I would have recommended Spider-Man only to carrion feasting theater vultures. Now, if I knew a less-than-precocious child of 10 or so and had several hundred dollars to throw away, I would consider taking him or her to the new and improved Spider-Man."
So really, if you had nothing better to do, and if you had lots of money, and if there was absolutely nothing else available to amuse you on a Saturday, and you had a 10-year-old, they might be somebody you would take to this.
Vulture Scott Brown wrote, "Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark is like that good and crazy friend with a highly entertaining substance abuse problem. The one who went off and got clean and came back a different and diminished person. With his manias and overmuchness, you realized, after he returned, how very little you ever had to offer one another. With Tamer gone and the ruins of her monstrous Lovecraftian vision overrun by Lilliputians, there's simply nothing to see here other than the sort of stunt spectacular that wouldn't look out of place amidst a backdrop of roller coasters and toddler vomit."
Jesus. Who is that? I don't ever want that guy to review this show or anything I ever do.
No, I love him. He's, he also ends his thing by saying, "Put your head to Spidey's chest and all you'll hear is the dull smack of a damp wad of cash hitting the boards." That's Vulture Scott Brown. I think I love him.
Well done, sir. All right. Best review ever. All right. Well, on that note, we'll just say that if you want to get this program later on the day, if you're only hearing part of it, want to hear it again, or if you want to pass it along to your friends and neighbors and loved ones and colleagues and coworkers and mortal enemies,
give it as a Father's Day gift.
Precisely. You can do that by going to iTunes, or you can get it here as a direct MP3 download at Cascadia.fm or at Legion of News. Radio.com. You can also take it with you on your mobile device. There we go. Fantastic. And on that note, we now bring a curtain down on this episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff. Cheryl Kennecoa, The Rick Emerson Show next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Today featuring Peanuts Watch, Taser Watch, and Mr. Aaron Mesh. We thank you for listening, and we will see you again tomorrow, Thursday at noon, for another episode of Legion of News. Have a safe and satisfying Wednesday, won't you?